Hey, Josh.
Hey Nate, how you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty great. It's a new year, new first week back in the chair, Feels like everything's all fresh and, off to a new start. So, yeah, life's good.
Back in the chair. I like it.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm good. Yeah, so I didn't take as much time. My kids went back to school on Thursday. So, day after New Year, so quote unquote, a little more back in the chair then, and then I worked a little bit here and there during the whole break, and then we got snow here, which we don't get it very often, but had some big snows here, so they've been out of school. So they went back for Monday or for last Thursday and Friday, and then they were off Monday, Tuesday, and today.
Oh man, crazy. Like actually like a bunch of snow or like a dusting and everyone's scared of it.
I don't know. It's not quite a foot, but it's like I just think it's less necessarily about the amount, but also like the size of the county, and they do things at the county level. So it's sort of like, did we get plows out to everyone? Like, I don't know. So they made the judgment calls on the school closings pretty early. They were always done like pretty much like the afternoon before. So like
Oh, okay.
Sunday afternoon, they already did it. I think it was like, I don't know. I'm sure there's probably complaints about like, almost giving more forewarning to parents so they can manage their schedules and whatnot. And, versus like when you were a kid, it was like they waited till the very last minute to call it. So it was like you're sitting there at like 6 in the morning being like, come on, just make the call. It's obvious. We want a snow day. So I don't know. I feel like some of this is just like based off of current times and feedback loops and stuff. So.
Good. Well, back at it and new year. Let's see how many episodes we can do this year.
All right. So I did have a couple thoughts. I know last we left our hero Nate in his SaaS journey. We closed a chapter, but we also brought up some new ideas around finding a bootstrap SaaS business. So I had a couple epiphanies over the break. Not major, but and not too much of a change from where we went, but I kind of had two bits of homework or questions for you. So, what was it? Yeah. Interesting. I did not know that.
Sorry,
I don't
continue.
know if I had them on Monday, so it was probably maybe the past couple weeks. So, number one, so just a quick recap. So we talked about, an order of operations for finding a bootstrap business, and I said, do these things first, and it was a group of like things like find an existing market, find a low churn product or a service. Is there a way you can stand out and be 10x better? And then also, is there a high propensity for customers to share with each other? Right. So like, is there even a possibility of strong word of mouth? Like, even if you do an awesome job, are people going to talk about it to their peers that are potential customers? Right.
Put as many levers working in your direction as possible.
Right. So one of the questions I had, so one of the bits of homework, and maybe you can take it offline to do this, or you can think of it later, but it was like within that scope of requirements or like checklist that I just mentioned, cross-reference that with all of the like what you know of as successful bootstrap businesses and see if you can find a hole in it.
See if I can find a hole in it, as in, like, are there any of those that don't work, you mean? Or as
Right.
in,
Like just
like.
sort of like let's pressure test it a little bit to say more than, just like, you could probably think of people in our Slack group, think about, hopefully not necessarily just random people on the internet, because who knows what they're actually doing and saying, but just like the ones that you would deem as a little more believable, right? And just sort of like pressure test it. Are there any other? My hope is that it fits every one of those, more or less fits those. There might be some outliers, but for the most part, like, okay, is there like, just sort of a, again, pressure test and building a rigor or a confidence around this sort of a framework.
Yeah, I think maybe the one that's the hardest is like the 10x difference. I think that's a really tough one to be able to find an existing market and to be able to have a something that is like believably 10x better to most people on the face of it. The other ones, they seem fairly straightforward to me. I think that they do work, and at least from what I can tell, I haven't, you know, spent a lot of time trying to pressure test those, but
yeah, you're right. 10x might be a tall order because it's also very subjective. Well, if I was to even tone it down, I'd probably say, like, is there a strong, unique take on that?
Yeah,
right?
I think
pricing can be one. Yep. Positioning. It's really getting more into positioning and that kind of like, who are you best for, right?
So. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that probably, you know, you can with some niches that would also kind of feed into that, right? Like, you're the best for this type of person or something like that. And basically any of those like corner of the markets you could play into, right? I think I'd probably try to want to avoid being the cheap option. But if there's like, you know, just enterprise software in that category, you know, maybe there's a room for that too.
Yeah. And pricing and packaging is a whole different kind of ball of wax anyway, because it's just, it could just be relative, right? So like something that is $1 million a year to someone, it's like, I could do that for 100,000, right? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So it is cheaper, right? But not necessarily like $10 a month.
Yeah. Another like kind of requirement I was thinking of was that it probably shouldn't be something that's overly complicated either. And I know that kind of goes against my nature to want to do complicated things, but if I'm going to be able to
back it up, overcomplicated in what sense?
In the sense of how long would it take you to be able to make an MVP of this thing that is like fully, you know, it can do the thing that you're promising. So like, I'm thinking of, I'm not going to go build an ERP system. It's going to take, you know, years to be able to get that all flushed out to the point that it's delivering value for people.
I don't think that's a good way to add that to the mix just yet. Like, cause I could argue an ERP for a very specific small type of customer or very specific customer, like, you know, I don't have to build in any customization, but I'm building for this for one user, even though it may, I'm not trying to boil the ocean, but if I know exactly what I need to build, it could be done in a very like, you know, maybe not the most like best coding examples of like, you know, scalable code, but I could probably do something. Right. So, I don't know. So I wouldn't put that into the, like, I wouldn't worry about that yet. So. Mm-hmm.
But I guess maybe this also kind of comes from, like, I have spent, you know, I've allocated a couple hours every day to work on the, like, finding ideas and things. And one thing that I've found is that there doesn't seem to be a lot of like major differentiation that is possible in a lot of markets, where it's like there's a category of software, right? Like maybe it's CRMs for different people, and it's like, you know, CRMs for freelancers, let's say. And it's like, okay, well, within CRM for freelancers, like, what is there that I could do that would be differentiated? And there doesn't seem to be room enough to say, well, I have this, you know, I have this small feature set that's just so awesome that you'd be willing to switch to me. It feels more like the table stakes are still fairly high in a lot of these markets.
Okay. One thing I would counter that with is, well, actually, so at the top of the podcast, I talked about two pieces of homework. So this is probably the third piece, but I'll get back to the second one in a minute. So I kind of I think it was actually this morning, I saw a Twitter post from Heaton Shaw, right? Mm-hmm. I think you're familiar with Heaton Shaw, right? He's like a OG SaaS person. And I'll share it in, but the general, I'll just read a bit about it. It says, it's titled The Story in Your Head. And he says, most founders I talk to have this same problem. I see it every day. The story starts in a quiet room. A founder built something useful, but their mind creates walls before they ever hit a real one. Let's be honest. Your mind is great at writing fiction. So here's what usually happens. Here's our founder. They created something to help teams collaborate better. But every time Alex looks at the other players in the market, the story in his head got darker. The walls got higher. They have more features. They have more funding. They have more everything. You know this voice. So it kind of resonates with me with what you're saying there, because then it gets into this other one. He's like, here's an exercise. Write down every limiting belief and every scary story and write your own new story. So instead of they have more features, they have more funding, and they have more everything, he says, We talk to users every day. We ship features in days, not months. We solve one problem better than anyone. He said the product stayed the same, the market stayed the same, the competition stayed the same, but his internal story changed. And just sort of like, anyway, I'll send it, but it was like one of these sort of like, okay, it's really about, you know, the story you're telling, right? For yourself, right? And, you know, is that, and that's where I think in the framework that we talked about, if like, it's not necessary, and maybe it's less about find the who you can stand out to, and right? It might be as simple as just, I pick up the phone, at mm-hmm. least in the initial one. And if you have low churn and you need to pick up the phone for 5 customers and you have to fight and crawl to get them, but they have low churn and they're going to tell other people, like you have something there. So it's less about the competition. It's more about like, where can I punch through and make something stick? So,
but there does have to be room to be different, right? Like you can't just go in with the same thing and maybe say you have better service or something like that, because that remains to be seen. Like that's kind of something you have to prove to the market before.
But different at what level, right? Like, so, and for who? So even just the same exact product, like from a technical back end perspective, right? Mm-hmm. Marketed to a new different customer, that's different to them. Like most shoppers don't even see all the competition. They just, you know, it's like, think about finding a plumber. It's like, mm-hmm. who picks up the phone? Who gets back to me? I don't want to run an enterprise search on this thing. I know there's probably only like a dozen in my local area that are going to fit me, right? So you're not mm-hmm. trying to be the plumber that fits for everyone. You're just trying to be the one they're going to pick and giving them a strong, compelling reason that day. And it could be local is a reason, right? Like pricing and packaging is a reason, just packaged differently is a reason. Like all these other ones are differentiated enough on its face. And if we go back to the whole idea of like, if it's a low churn thing, that also potentially means like, they're just happy with their plumber, right? Like they don't, mm-hmm. they're not actively shopping every month to switch plumbers unless they feel like they're not getting a good value. So you shouldn't even have to think about the competition of a switching cost, right? Of like, well, that thing has that stuff better, right? It's just like, well, how can I serve this one customer?
Right. And so I guess you, to find room in the market though, like that kind of lowers the criteria for a market, because you could look at any market that has a lot of players in it and say, you know, I could be one more. And I guess the only difference there then is that you are marketing to a different person, I guess, or talking to them in a different way.
Yeah. So this actually gets me to homework item number 2.
Okay.
But unless you can finish your thought. Sorry. I was excited about it.
Yeah. I'm just kind of having, I'm now having the epiphany. So, but then if that's the case, then I guess it's more about looking at how the other competitors are marketing, and are they talking to this or that person? Because to me, that seems less of a technology thing, because I've often looked at feature differences or like ways that screens are laid out differently and things like that. But it sounds like you're saying more on the marketing side of it.
Well, no, I'm not saying the marketing side per se. I'm just saying from what I'm actually getting back to saying is like narrowing in on the person, like mm-hmm. the person, the buyer, the person doing the shopping, right? And this is what gets me to, and of course, a lot of it is marketing, and I'm growing to be annoyed at the word marketing in a way that it just means something to everyone. It means different things to everyone.
Yeah,
just, right. I've been in this deep dive of like strategy and all this stuff, and it actually comes, some of the best strategists basically are saying like, you know, like the biggest part of your whole strategy is marketing, but not thinking necessarily about the tactics of marketing, like
right, like the positioning,
and copy, but positioning is a big part of strategy, right? Like, and it's like you can't. It's marketing is like meeting the market, right? Like, so it's where you're, you know, and of course you have to deliver on the promise, which is with the product itself, right? Like, if you don't have those two things, right? But it gets me down to that other question or another homework assignment I have for you too, which might be a different way for you to approach, like, trying to find what you want to build. And essentially, it's who do you seek to serve? So instead of finding the what, find the who first. Right. So, yeah. And I know there's been this stuff on like going into communities and that type of thing, but not even like searching for the idea, just starting with who. I've been doing a lot of deep dives into Seth Godin stuff lately. And he released a new book like a few months ago when I started reading that one, in the first little cover underneath, it said, or like whatever the jacket cover, flag. It's like, yeah. this book is called This Is Strategy. But he's like, this book is a follow-up to my last book, which was This Is Marketing. And I hadn't read that.
Okay.
So I've read that one. Okay. So I would suggest, like, in this light, like everything I got out of that was the stuff he keeps repeating is, who are you seeking to serve? So I don't know how long ago you read that, but I would suggest rereading it, like, now in this headspace, because it's everything. If you, at least the lens I had with this, is everything was just about who are you seeking to serve, and everything else runs downstream from there. So if you decide to figure out who you want to serve, right? And because it does check a couple boxes in the categories that we're talking about, like, are people going to talk about the thing? It's like, okay. And I think you have different categories of people that you've worked with before. Like, you know, we start with the last one, you know, QA people. If you're seeking to serve them, then it's like, what could, like, not even thinking, but like, what do they need? What is something that they need that could be interesting and then fits these other categories, right? But just starting there and almost just, I don't know. I think it was an interesting take on it, so.
That's hard though, because I don't feel like there's much of a limiting factor there. Like, I know that I don't want to serve QA people at this point because I've gotten to know what their industry is like and kind of what they care about and that sort of thing. But there are a lot of people I've served in consulting that cover like a wide range of roles and industries. And there's, yeah, I could serve any of those and be, you know, happy doing that. And so it doesn't feel like much of a limiter, I guess, to me.
Okay. Well, who do you enjoy the most to serving, right? Or who would you do it to not get paid for it, right? Like, if it starts to feel like, you know, and you think about it, a lot of this is like, you think about a lot of people that, I don't know why, I have this certain ones, like, you know, Gusto and all these like payroll companies or whatever. Like, you hear a lot of them, and some of them were like, well, yeah, like my parents were a small business owner and payroll was a pain in the butt. Like, and I started out just wanting to help them, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what, I don't know how true all these stories are, but when you hear a lot of these ones where they went in this market that looked stupid, but they become this thing, or even at the end of it, if they were just serving and helping that thing, like, they've checked the box of like, do I enjoy getting up in the morning every day to work on this thing, right? So I know you've already, you know, X'd out like QA, which is fine.
Sure, yeah. But like, I've had that, for example, that I know a lot of people in the construction industry, and I really enjoy that industry as well. I do a lot of my own renos and stuff like that. But that also is a really tough market. I've done even some work for other clients that are putting products into that market. And that really doesn't seem like a place where gold is.
Or at least not for like a technical product, right? Because the hurdle... Mm-hmm. They have to jump over that from the, yes, from a crossing the chasm perspective, because that's also, you know, covered in the book and whatnot. But just like, I would suggest rereading the book this light of this, and like you said, it's hard to narrow stuff down. Cool. You've narrowed down like construction, X'd off the list. What else? Right. So like, from a technical product perspective. So you can go, you know, do you want to sell to marketers? I don't know. Like, maybe not. Like, I don't, I think marketers are really hard to sell to, right? It's like,
okay. Yeah. I think like I've kind of tried to focus a bit on the sales and like service fulfillment side of the industries, just because I think that there's more willingness to spend money there. And I also think that salespeople are more willing to talk to each other than most other groups of people.
And do you care about them?
I care about the problems that they have. Like, I don't know.
No, but do you care about them? Like, that's the thing. Do you care about certain, like, You know what I mean? Because this could be, it's often, it's funny. It's like, I've heard of people that, you know, built like outbound email products, but they actually don't feel right doing it. Like it's, okay, it's so it's conflicting, right? Because it's like, I don't want to serve more spam in the world. Right. So
sure.
And there were some good forcing functions within that This Is Marketing book. Cause I think there's stuff about like, if this sort of stuff we've talked about a little bit in the past, but if this thing perpetually happens, like, what does the world look like? And am I happy about that? Right. Like if I'm serving this person at infinite, you know, if let's say I got every salesperson to do what, it's like, do I feel good about what I did in the world? Yeah, do I want them to win? Right. So this is like this, it's trying to head off some of these like internal feelings. And I feel like it's a good, you know, again, forcing function. So don't think about who can I sell to, who can I market to, right? It's almost like, well, let's start with who would I, you know, I don't know. It's just an exercise that I don't know if it'll help or not.
So I think maybe the places I've had the most fun doing things have been where people have these like harebrained ideas about, you know, if I could only do, you know, this crazy thing with AI that'll like save me like 6 hours of my day kind of ideas. Or like, if I could only like show off this really fancy way of doing things to my customers, like they would buy or they would notice me and I could, you know, market to them better. Those kind of ideas have come to me from different people that are in like C-level positions. And that's been a lot of fun. I really enjoy the thrill of that, but that's also like, that's a lot more in the consulting kind of niche. I don't know that that's necessarily like a broadly applicable sort of thing. Yeah. I don't know. I think especially my consulting, I get along with a lot of people that maybe I'm very different from, or maybe don't necessarily, you know, want to do the thing that they do, but it's like, if I can find a way to help them, then that's kind of what does it. So,
well, yeah, I mean, you're a naturally, you know, I think you're a naturally want to be helpful person, right? And then you also like to do these technical things, right? But those two things are serving you, right? So like if you flip it into trying to, you know, find and serve like a potential person that is excited about just specifically more serving this person, not necessarily just like, you know, and again, I think we've created a couple roadblocks in there, which is good. Like, you know, it's like, hey, construction people, like, you know, we have Nate, his tool is tech stuff, is building software. That's your hammer, right? So, so like you're not, it's a virtual hammer, but it's not going to, you know, help the person that wants a real hammer. So, right. So it's like, okay, let's X out anything in the physical world, right? Or like people that are, you know, plumbers, it's sort of like they're also of that characteristic, like a little more laggards on technology, right? Like it's just not, that's not in their world.
Yeah. Another kind of maybe generalized thing is like, I have had a lot of fun making software for like orders and scheduling sort of things. And just to see like a room full of, you know, office workers basically that are using your software to be able to fulfill orders and like make things go faster and serve their customers better. I don't know. I think that's pretty cool. And also just there are people who are, they are experts in their own little area and, you know, they're very willing to take whatever they can to, you know, be able to help them serve their customers better. And that's a pretty rewarding thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're all rewarding and getting off of, it's like some of those things are probably, you know, adoption related. There's adoption challenges because everyone does things a little bit differently. So it's funny, is a lot of the ones you seem to definitely like the, I know you enjoy making an impact to day to day with those people and those types of problems, but is it like, who is the individual person? Like, it's like, okay, is it like an office admin? Okay, cool. Like what is, you know, and what are they being served now? So like, okay, there's Calendly, there's all these other things, but let's go into scheduling. Let's say it's an office admin that has to do a lot of scheduling. I don't know. So it's like, what do they, if you're seeking to serve that person, like what it maybe now it's like, okay, are there any holes in that type of thing? And how would I feel about, hey, I have this, you know, office admin scheduling software that's specifically more for the admin, not necessarily for the person doing the self-serving, right? Like, is that interesting, right? Like, because it's different than you or me using Calendly. It's an admin that's scheduling on behalf of multiple people, right? Like, you know, I don't know. Is there something to them? Because they're also potentially more adapt to using, you know, potentially software to help them scale something. So I don't know. And it's like, okay, how do I feel about that person? And at least when you get into that, it's like, well, that's not a problem. Actually, this is a problem. It's like, okay, well, if I'm sitting here sitting with you, Mr. or Mrs. Office Admin, right? Like, what are the things, you know, you have challenges with, right? And that's where I think it would go, was like starting with someone like that.
Yeah. And that would make sense, I guess. I think so far I've always built software for those people that is like custom software to their specific business and like integrates very deeply in their business. But I think there's probably a number of things I could look in there for sure. And that is helpful because it does narrow down. Like, I feel like at the moment I'm just picking out of the ocean one drop at a time, staring at it carefully and then being like, okay, no, not that one. So to have anything to narrow it down is helpful.
Yeah. And just identify, and that's what I said, like a very specific person that you actually could name a name, I think is powerful, right? Because like ambiguous salesperson, ambiguous marketing person, ambiguous QA person, right? And it's like when you get into that of, and also checking with, do I actually care about this person's problems, right? If it's a salesperson, it's like, yeah, is it decoupling? Do I care about the actually helping the person, or do I just care about being helpful, right? So like there's a split there, because I know you care about being helpful, right? Yeah. And seeing someone light up when you've solved their problem. But if solving their problem means like, you know, they're going to be robocalling more people, now you're like, wait a second. I did solve your problem. Yeah. That was exciting. But do I actually want more people to use this software?
Well, one kind of area I did look at a little bit was like for salespeople, was to help them build better proposals or better estimates. And I found that rather interesting because like, I don't want to build them robocalling software, but I do want to help them, you know, give a good presentation to their clients. And that's, you know, that's an area I care about.
Do you think they care about it?
Yeah, they obviously care.
See, that's where I think it starts.
They obviously care enough that there's a market for it. And I've have a number of clients that I've quoted on building that for them. So I do know that's a thing.
Well, no. I know it's a thing, but is it the actual salesperson? So if I think of
I see what
Joe, you mean. The sales guy, does he actually care about taking more time to build in his proposal? If his ultimate goal is, I just want to make more sales, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's never going to want to do that. Like, if he's making sales already, he doesn't care about his proposal software, right? Like, and it's oftentimes, even in a sales environment, like we have salespeople, that, you know how long, like oftentimes they are more reluctant to change behaviors because they don't know. They know that this gets me a 10% win rate or 20% win rate, but anything else that is not like they feel like they know the formula to like make a sale. So oftentimes they are resistant to that change. Now, who might want the better proposal software? It might be their manager, or it might be the ops person that gets all the questions around this. That's what I asked about. Do they actually want it? Are they intrinsically motivated? Because you want to align those two things. I want to get a person that is excited about doing that thing, where if I call them for feedback, they're going to give me feedback, not because they just want to hear themselves talk, but because they're actually like excited because it better aligns with them, right? Like the QA one would also probably have not fit this one either. You're like, you excited about automating a thing? They're like, no.
Hard pass. Yeah. Yeah. And then, that is tricky though, because I think there are products that, you know, you're in some way selling to someone's manager, but the person on that's doing the work is the one that's actually going to be using the software, kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think that's what you need to focus on, is like, that's the person that's going to be excited and is going to tell the other person. I try to decouple yourselves as much from anything that is like a layer of separation away from the actual like user. And that's why it's like, who am I seeking to serve? I'm seeking to serve this. Now, if you're seeking to serve a manager that is like caring about all these things, but you have to really feel like, do they really care? Right.
Yeah.
Even in general human nature, like does, we've talked about, people that actually look at analytics and data and spreadsheets, mm-hmm. like there are people that love them, like probably mm-hmm. you and me.
Oh, yeah.
And there, most people do not. So any given manager, do they actually like doing that stuff? No, not really. Right. So it's sort of like they don't even care if it's accurate. They just care that they did their report and they sent it up the chain. Right. So like
that's so true.
And selling to them for that, like that's where to like go in that layer deeper. Who is that individual person, and do they even really,
care
about?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think that's where it kind of narrows too, because it's like, what are the top, three pieces of software this person would use in a day, and that, or three tasks maybe is a better way to say it, of, or categories of tasks. And then that way you can kind of narrow down like what's actually going to have an impact, because if you're not in the top three, like nobody really cares, maybe they stumble across you or something, but yeah. That is helpful to narrow it down. It's a lot to think about. I also find it hard to, you look at these markets and you try to judge for yourself, kind of, is this actually a problem or not, right? Before going through all the effort of, maybe doing a landing page or something to try and gauge interest. And it's like, it's hard because you aren't that person. Maybe you know a couple of people that are those people, but also they are just a small sample, right? And so maybe, maybe they don't like it, but there's always somebody that's unhappy with something.
Right. So, yeah, and that's where I think this talking to people and exploring people's problems, right? Like versus the like feeling of like, I'm trying to find an idea and I just want to work on an idea. Cause I know you just want to work on an idea, but like, it's sort of like, dating and whatnot is like when you're looking for dating and stuff like that, it's the hardest time to do that. When it happens a little more organically, yeah. Because I wasn't thinking, the watched kettle or that type of metaphor as well. It's like you're putting more pressure on yourself, and like it's like you're going to the grocery store hungry as well, right?
Yeah,
so it's just like, well, if serving Nate is by just trying to find people that he, actually wants to like work with and care with and care about their problems, like if you're going to be living with that person's problem the rest of, for this long time of potentially building this SaaS company, like, do I actually care about the user? Do they care about the stuff? So am I just doing something that to them is like, it's checking a box and it's like kind of annoying. Right. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. That does give some clarity on where to look. Yeah. Fun fact. When I met my wife, that was actually the case, that I was not really looking for anyone. And previous to that, I had been looking very hard and not found anyone. So, somewhat true.
Yeah. So yeah, I think tracking back to what we've learned, like, Nate following his technical passion has not been necessarily a great, like, directional help, right? Like, it was fun. You got to build some things. You had fun doing it. So there's no harm in that. But now it's time to, like, find the person you want to serve, right? And find what they're willing to pay for or excited about. But yeah, I would suggest rereading that book. And I also know you do a lot of audio books as well.
Yep. I'll add that to my short list.
Cool. Well, and I'll send you that other thing on the story thing. I think that's a good way to think about it, because it's easy to psych yourself out with these things. And there's probably more stories of people that, like, I just didn't even look at the market. And the real thing is, like, can I do something, even just, be the local plumber guy that for that service? And it doesn't have to necessarily be, a massive thing across the internet to be successful, right? For you, right? It's not, you don't have to be venture scale. You don't have to do this. You just want to have, like, I want to control my destiny and build, stack bricks on top of the thing that I keep working on versus like keep building new houses and only get paid for the hourly on those.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, you give me lots to think about, Josh. I appreciate it.
Cool. No problem. All right. I will send you those links and we'll talk to you later.
See ya.
Happy New Year. Bye.
You too. Hey, thanks for joining us today. If you want to chat with us, we're on Twitter. I'm at Nate Bosher and Josh is at JLogic. If you're a new listener, check out some of our most popular episodes. Episode 52, 7 Years to 22 MRR and Zombie Startups. Or episode 30, Review Sites Are a Necessary Evil and Hacks to Get Around Them. Thanks again.